afternoon. This is Elisa Mattson for the National Park Service. Today is October 20th, 1994, and I'm in the home of Mr. John Daly, who came from Scotland in 1929 when he was six years old. Mm-hmm. Mr. Daly, can you please tell me your name and your date of birth?
John Patrick Daly, born April 19, 1923.
Can you tell me where you came from in Scotland?
A town called Dumbarton, which I had always called Dumbartonshire, which is now a suburb of Greater Glasgow.
Can you tell me what your town looked like?
It was very rural, small houses along dirt roads. And I happen to remember our street, which apparently the houses didn't have bathrooms, because on this street, the middle of the road was an outhouse or a public blah blah, whatever you call it, where you would go in a door and then you could see the people's feet underneath. So you knew what they were doing. Wood. Some of them had straw or thatched roofs, which always looked yellow.
Your house, can you describe what your house looked like?
It was a wooden two-story house with a slate roof.
How many rooms did it have?
Oh, I don't recall. I remember it was kind of rambly. There was 12 kids in the family.
And what was your father's name?
His name was Patrick, and he was a big guy with a black mustache of the Hitler type, only wider, you know, and thick mustache. And he was from Ireland. He was asked to leave Ireland by the IRA, which he was a leader in an IRA group. And the English, at that time in Southern Ireland, the English were running around. They were called black and tans for some reason, or maybe the color of their cars or what the color of their clothes, whatever. They were called black and tans, and that's what the Irish called them. And they would just go around in these lorries, which was a truck, and they'd come roaring into a town looking for Patrick Daly, if they heard he was there. And they would burn down houses to get at him, and they were arresting women and children, men, anybody at all, taking them out of the area. They were making it very unpleasant to have Patrick Daly around, very costly. So the IRA ultimately, the price was so high on his head that they ultimately asked him to leave the country. And he ended up in Glasgow, where he met a gal named Annie McCann.
And that would be your mother.
Yeah.
What did most people in this town do for a living?
I know that my father was one of four boys, of whom he was the firstborn, and in that culture, the firstborn was sacrificed to a career of working to support the remaining children to go through college, if they were able to. So he, with his help, he put his three younger brothers through college. They became doctors. He was a miner, coal miner.
And he continued to do that when he was in Scotland?
Yeah.
Now, your mother, could you describe her? what she looked like?
She was a, I don't recall, because they died when I was 9 years old. So all I know is the pictures.
What are the pictures?
And the vague recollection of my knowing her. The pictures were of a, I don't know how tall she was, but she was of average height and slender. She had auburn hair, which seems to be a trait that appears off and on through the family, mostly in the girls, not in the males.
What was her maiden name?
Annie McCann.
Do you remember a story from your childhood? Is there a story that you associate with your mother or your father?
Well, apparently, I was dyslexic mathematically, but I excelled in English. And from my earliest years, I had problem with numbers and math and whatever. My father was good at math, and he just failed to understand why I didn't absorb math, and he used to beat me. And the way he would do that is he would, in these big motions, about threatening gestures, taking off his belt, and he was going to whack me in the family with his belt. And that always set an uproar with my family and my mother, who threw herself in the way of the train so I wouldn't get hit, you know. And this is the thing I remember about my father. I think, and my other brothers and sisters don't remember him as being brutal like that. Just me.
That's your memory.
Yeah. And I remember her as I remember one incident with her after we arrived in New York City specifically. And we were in a kind of long railroad kind of apartment with a lot of bedrooms along the way, this long haul. And it was a loud thunderstorm with a lot of lightning. Well, she heard it, me and some of my sisters, into an inner bedroom. We were away from the most light, from the lightning. And she got us into the bed, and she pulled the cover over us, and then she put her body over us so we wouldn't be struck by the lightning. And she prayed as fast as she could. Well, this left me with a horrifying fear of electric storms and thunder. I now love it. I could walk out naked in a storm, you know. And I love this porch just to see it, you know, and hear it. And I love rough seas, and I don't mind a storm at sea. And I had a boating business after the war, so and a fishing boat business in New York City. And I used to love the rough weather, like riding a horse to me. Everybody be throwing up all over the place. But back to Scotland, what I remember about this dirt road is a toy that I had was a large thing about the size of a large hula hoop, but it was apparently some kind of heavy metal, a ring. And what we would do is we would have a little bar of metal about a foot long with a hook on the end, and with the hook we would steer the metal rod, the metal ring, so that it got faster and faster. And after a while you would hear the metal singing on this little hook as you ran along, and if it hit somebody, it would knock them over, you know. But we used to run with that and steer it.
Do you remember any other toys or games that you play as a child in Scotland?
Well, at the end of this dirt road, there was sort of the ground rising up into towards the Highlands. And I remember about 200 feet up, there was a kind of a level area which was a rabbit farm. And as small as I was, some of these big brown hares were bigger than me. And I mean, when they'd sit up, they'd be looking down at me with these big brown eyes. And I have dreams about that as if it's still real sometimes.
Did you have any pets growing up?
I don't remember any pets. I do remember being afraid of dogs because on that street, there was a big Airedale, which was taller than my head, and on all fours. And he just loved to play with these kids out in the street. But to me, I thought this guy wanted to eat me, you know. And when I see, and the dog's name was Rock, R-O-C. And when I'd hear Rock barking, I would run to climb up on something. And I remember there was like something like a telephone booth, which it wasn't. It was a shed or something against a wall. And I would have a way of making two bounds and getting on top of that so he couldn't reach me. But I remember him trying to get up at me because he wanted to play with me. And all I felt was that hot breath, and he wanted to eat me.
How about a garden? Did your parents have a garden? Do you remember?
I have no recollection of that. I don't remember my house as much as I remember an aunt called Aunt Susan, who lived up on the corner of our street.
Now, was that your mother's family?
My mother's sister.
Your mother's sister.
And what I remember about that house is that they had a cat. And the only way I remember that they had a cat is one day I was going out of their house and I closed the door and I got the cat's tail caught in the door. And the shrieking of that cat put me into shock.
Do you remember your mother cooking? Do you remember what she used to make for dinner in your house?
Oh, one more thing about Aunt Susan's house.
Okay.
What I specifically recall about that and why I look forward to going there is because she doted on me. I was something special to her, which is good because I come from a family of 12 children. And you don't get a lot of doting, you know, especially if you're the third youngest. So what I would get in Aunt Susan's house is when it was time to go to bed, this big bed, and I'd go up two steps to get into the bed. And then in the bed, under the covers, these big quilted covers, she would have some kind of hot water bottles or something by my feet. Well, I was in heaven with these huge pillows and all that attention.
What was the thing that your mother would make for dinner?
Okay.
What would you eat?
Well, I haven't had it since, but a big thing there was tripe. Tripe, which is the lining of the stomach, I don't know, of a sheep or a, I think a sheep. And it had.
Do you remember how she would cook it?
Could
you describe that?
Probably boiled along with carrots and potatoes and things.
Almost as if it was a stew?
I mean, like a stew.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember much else about what we were eating, except very specifically, I remember oatmeal. And oatmeal was made and poured out onto a platter about 2 or 3 feet long. And what we did was we cut out the amount that we wanted and put it onto your plate.
So it was very thick.
Yeah.
And that was would you eat that for breakfast? That would be
yes.
Breakfast. Do you remember your grandparents?
I have absolutely zero recollection of any grandparents, because my father would have been in Ireland.
Right.
And I recall hearing that my mother had originally come from Ireland herself sometime before that, but she spoke Scottish and he spoke Irish. And when he asked me to get a pen, what he wanted was a pen, and I would go and get him a pen, and he would just blow his stack. Don't you understand English?
He had a temper on him.
Yeah, with me he did. I set him off easily.
Why don't you tell me, you come from such a large family, 12 siblings. Tell me your brothers and sisters' names and maybe something about them.
Well,
if you want to do it in chronological order.
Okay. Well, there are four boys. Jimmy is the oldest, deceased now. The other two are still living. Patrick is in Florida. He's 2 years older than me. And today is the 20th?
Yes.
Yesterday, Tommy, who lives in Long Island, flew down to Florida with his wife because he just retired. And he's going to visit Pat. Tommy is the younger brother, 2 years younger than me, who has paralytic polio. Married for many years and has four children and three grandchildren. And he was a design engineer. Just retired. Jimmy, the eldest, had been a miner, coal miner, and when he came to the United States, he worked on the Lincoln Tunnel and the Holland Tunnel and the East River Tunnel, whatever you call that, and the Battery Tunnel.
And what kind of work did he do for that? The same kind of work
He was a sand hog.
Okay.
Where you had to go down and use this digging equipment and equipment that digs, whatever you call it. And he wore a badge or carried identification so that if he was ever found unconscious because of the effect of bends, which is a sudden deprivation of oxygen in the body and you collapse, so that people didn't think you were a drunk or something, you had this identification so that people could rush you to a decompression chamber to save your life. And my brother Patrick also was working as a sand hog like that, and a couple of times he experienced those problems where he was found lying in the street in New York and rushed to the 42nd Street in the east in the Hudson River, wherever they had a chamber there. Because I think they had addresses on these ID things where they could take somebody to that place. And he has horrible memories of that struggling for air and then collapsing.
Must be frightening experience.
Yeah.
What about your sisters?
Eight girls. And I make a joke about that. I say, having eight sisters and wearing hand-me-down clothes, I was 11 years old before I found out I was a boy. But that's not true.
Well, what are their names?
The oldest one was Mary. who just died in Florida 2 years ago. Mary was a domestic for a wealthy family, cook, and she retired many years ago and went to Florida with another sister called Lena, who has died several years ago also. Lena worked with AT&T all her time since we came from Scotland. Another sister who is still in Florida is Kay. Kay was a fashion model, blonde, dyed blonde. Margaret was a college professor. She was a gal that she recently died. Her son was a New York policeman who went to law school and became an attorney. He ultimately founded a security organization, started his own business in New York, and then his wife was an executive with some organization, and she was being transferred to Paris. So he went with her and presently founded and is running his own security organization in Paris. And he has two girls. Another sister is Anne, whose husband was a construction worker, and she had three children, two boys and a girl. She died about 5 years ago, lived out in Long Island. I'm trying to think of the... Oh, another sister, Elizabeth, she's the one that's 2 years older than me. She presently lives out in Long Island. She and her husband, Charles King, have a business where they teach the finalists of the Harvest Moon ballroom dancers that you see on television. And then they also teach like in schools, school of dance. Another sister is Rose, who was 2 years younger than me. all of the girls in my family had cancer at one time or another. Some operable, and mostly they succumbed to it. The eight girls. The only two surviving girls now are Kay in Florida and Elizabeth, or Liz, and her husband calls her Betty, in Long Island. The surviving boys are Patrick in Florida and Tommy, my younger brother, who is visiting Pat in Florida now, and myself. I guess there's five kids left out of the 12.
Now let's get back, I think, onto you leaving Scotland.
Okay.
Why did your family decide to leave Scotland?
Well, that was the Depression. At that time was a world depression. I mean, most countries, their economy collapsed completely. Yeah, and that was the height of the Depression. That was the banner year. They call it the 1929 Depression. And there we were. I remember in Scotland, I'd hear people singing a song, "I know a happy land far, far away, where you get ham and eggs 10 times a day." And so there was apparently this kind of image of this panacea country someplace. And my father had apparently succeeded in getting a job here before he left there. So he was superintendent of school, like the maintenance, in charge of the maintenance people.
Now did he go to America first and land this job, or did he do that from Scotland?
No, we all came together.
We all came together.
Yeah.
That was his first trip, was with the family.
Yeah, I understand that a couple of the older gals had come over here prior to us all leaving and gotten jobs here. And then when we all got this big apartment in New York City, a couple of those older ones were out on their own in an apartment.
And they already had jobs.
Yeah.
Now, do you remember what time of year it was when you left Scotland?
It was wasn't the dead of winter, I know that, because I remember just wearing a sweater, and I remember going to the train station in Glasgow, and
so that's how you took a train to Liverpool.
So this train station was all I remember is this big platform with some kind of glass roof. And my brother, Jimmy, had been with the Gordon Highlanders Regiment. And the regimental band was piping us off.
Do you remember what you took with you? Is there anything special that you wanted to bring?
Yes. A bag of jelly beans. I hadn't seen jelly beans before, and I had this big bag of jelly beans. And when the train came into the station, and the wind almost blew us all away, and the sound of the whistle, I dropped the jelly beans. I would not get on the train till I had picked up all the jelly beans. So they had the...
What ship did you come on?
The regimental band had to help me pick up the
jelly
beans.
What was the name of the ship that you came on?
The HMS Caledonia.
Can you describe what the ship looked like?
I know that the ship's horn, when it first went off, my reaction to that was I peed in my pants.
Must have been a very loud horn.
Yeah. It was kind of a shocking sound.
Do you remember your living quarters on the boat? Where did you stay?
No. I didn't know until I visited Ellis Island last year that where I stayed was probably in steerage, what they call steerage. And I don't physically recall the shape of it or what I slept in or how many people were in the room or whatever.
Do you remember eating anything on the boat? Do you remember dinner or what you ate when you were on the boat?
I don't recall that at all, but There are two specific incidents I remember about the trip. One was that it had these decks with the deck chairs, and the people would come out with their coats and sweaters and sit around on the deck chairs. And then I was up on deck, and I found this wrench lying on top of a fire hydrant. So I turned it, and pretty soon the water began to come out pretty strong. And then after a while, I was trying to shut it off, but it was coming out stronger. And before you know it, I was washing people down the decks, and all the chairs tumbling over, and the people getting their feet knocked out from under them and screaming and getting washed down the deck by this force of this water. And then finally, a sailor came out of the side door, and he was trying to get up to me, and it knocked him down and washed him away too. And he ended up in the pile of deck chairs. So I don't remember the end of that story, but I remember it left me in in some kind of shock that this was happening because of what I was doing. And the other thing I remember was seeing quite a few whales. And you would see them breaking the surface and coming up and down in long lines.
Were the seas rough?
I don't remember experiencing bad weather. I don't remember the weather specifically. But I remember coming into New York City. And we came in.
Was it nighttime or in the morning?
It was afternoon, I think. And as we came in to the lower bay, the Hudson Bay, and we were approaching the Statue of Liberty, everybody was up on deck, and they were holding me up so I could see it in the crowd. And I remember people weeping.
Do you remember how long it took?
No.
But that was an emotional time for
yeah,
people.
Yeah.
How about types of people? Were most of the people on this boat English, Scottish, different countries?
Well, coming out of Liverpool, the only other people I recall was a family called Hickey, which were close friends of ours, and that was another large family. And one of the girls was Nan Hickey, and then Tina Hickey, and my older brother was infatuated with Tina Hickey, and so was I. She was older than me, and she was more about his age, so she was a couple of years older than me. And she had this voice that cracked, like that, you know? And wow, that's all I had to hear is that voice, and it turned me to jello. And Pat was in love with her.
Now, what else do you remember about coming into New York? Do you remember getting off the boat or coming to Ellis Island?
Okay, I didn't know until last year that I had remembered something about Ellis Island, because I had this terrific experience or re-experience of the registration room, and I sat there stunned by this deja vu feeling that I'd been there before, and I could hear the sounds again as if it was happening now. The kind of rumble of the many, many voices, and the people's name being called out, and the resonating through this big room with the very high ceiling, and it just chilled me. My wife asked me what was going on. because I looked so strange to her. And I told her I was just re-experiencing this thing which I didn't recall. I didn't know that I had been there before. And there I am, reliving it.
Do you remember who came to get you from Ellis Island? Did anyone come to get you? Were you greeted by anyone, or did you just go to your apartment?
Well, I don't recall the Ellis Island experience,
right,
other than I sort of recall taking the ferry from there to Manhattan, the lower Manhattan, and when we got into Manhattan, what I definitely recall is two large orange-colored DeSoto taxicabs, which we filled up, and they had these jump seats, and we just loaded them up, and we went to this apartment near Houston Street in lower Manhattan. It was the Lower East Side, and it was that polyglot mixture of many Jews, and a lot of my friends, lifelong friends, became Jews that I met there, these families. In fact, I was what they call a Shaba Goy. Do you know what that is? On certain holy days of the week, on their Sabbath or Shabbat, they're not permitted to do things like drive a car or turn on a gas or whatever. So they could cook. They would have to have a Shabbat Goy. Shabbat is Sabbath, and Goy is a Christian. Come in and be allowed to turn on the gas for them. And for that service, what they did is they would cook like a pail of challah, which is a kind of a Jewish bread or cake, and they would give that to me as thanks for being the Shabbat Goy. And I remember loving that, the challah, and it was kind of a bread, lumpy bread that you just grabbed a lump and you pulled it off. And you buttered it.
So you still keep up relationships with people that you knew from that neighborhood, your very first neighborhood?
Well, I did until I left New York, and then we sort of dissolved.
What did your house look like?
But the names of, there was the Fines, F-I-N-E, and it was Milty Fine and Bernie Fine were my brothers and my friends, mm-hmm. And then the others were I can't think of the other name. Baranovsky was another family, which had boys the same age as my brother and I, and became our lifelong friends. And when we lived up in the Bronx, we were near the Baranovskys and the Fines, and we still saw each other. What was your question?
What did your house look like in that neighborhood?
In New York?
In New York.
Oh, it was a probably about a 6-story tenement building. I guess it would be a tenement building. And about 5 years ago, I went back to re-experience that neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
And again, like the registry room, I was experiencing something that I didn't know that I knew. The Jewish stores along Hester Street and Delancey Street, or those, the Lower East Side there. And I walked into them, and I had this feeling that I'd been there before, because behind the counter were these guys, the Jewish guys, with the very white faces and the hawk-like nose and the black eyes and the payas the black velvety hat with the black cloak and the payas, the hair coming down the side. And I re-experienced something that did happen when I first came over there. And there I am into a candy store, a Jewish candy store, and a little kid, you have to look through this wall of glass and see the candy, and you point to what you want, and you see a face looking at you through the glass from the inside, saying, "Which one, kid, which one?" You know, and you're pointing. And then I went to give him the money for what I picked out, and I was giving him threepenny bits and halfpennies, Scottish money, and he says, "What the hell is this, kid? You know, this is no good." But I relived the experience of the Jews who were my friends there. And it was such a warm feeling, like I was back to my childhood and I was home. And it was this crowded street with the kids playing out in the street and the cars double parked and crowded, and these tenement buildings one after the other. I was home.
Do you remember any holidays growing up in your house? Can you describe a holiday? Christmas?
Well, in this big apartment we got in the Lower East Side, I remember that the parlor was the room for festivities and parties. And because liquor was being served, they didn't permit us little children into that room. So we were back in another part. And then we would have to sneak in there, you know, peek in the door and see what was going on. But there would be this, the dancing and the hornpipe recordings of the hornpipe music, and my sister Kay, who lives in Florida now, she was a champion sword dancer. You know what the sword dance is? Where they cross swords on the ground and on tiptoe, like ballet style, you dance over the swords without hitting them. And quite often males did that too.
What did your father do for a living when he came to
He was the in charge of the maintenance of schools, one or more schools.
And did your mother work here?
No, she was too busy with that big family.
That was enough work.
And it wasn't too proper for the maternal person in the family to work. Yeah.
What can you tell me about school when you came? Do you remember any stories from going to school, grade school?
Well, in Scotland, I remember what must have been the first day of school, and school was a long, long walk. I think school was in Paisley. We were in Paisley or Auchinstary. And I walked from home to that school. And I guess my mother or somebody would have taken me there. And then I would come home with older kids or whatever. I don't remember the logistics of it. But I do remember one day having to go to the bathroom while I was in school. And the routine was that you hold up your hand, and when you get recognized, then you have to come up to the teacher, and she hands you a a lump of wood with a key tied to the end of it, and that becomes the key to the bathroom. Well, I was just thoroughly embarrassed by this whole routine. So what I did was I decided to go home and go to the bathroom. Now, home is like, I don't know, half a mile away, a mile, which I was going to walk. So, and the school had this high metal fence around it. And what I had to do was climb over the fence, and they had these spikes on top. And in climbing over the top, the spikes caught my pants. And I was hanging from the top of the fence by my pants. And then I defecated. And it was a mess. Anyhow, I had to rip the pants to get down, and then I went all the way home, and my mother got a hold of me. She washed me up, changed my clothes, and sent me back to school. And I go back into the school, over the fence, and into the school, and I remember the teacher saying, "Whoa, Jock," she called me Jock. She says, "Jock is back." He says, you must have really had to go, Jock." I must have been gone, I don't know, 2 hours or something.
What about religion? Did you have your family a religious family?
Yeah, we were raised as devout Catholics. That ultimately changed for me personally, which I'll tell you later. But one of the things, we all went to church and together. And I remember sweating with a suit on in a church on a, I guess, warm weather or something. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember church in Scotland.
Just in America.
But in America, specifically church, going together, walking to church. And
now, what can you tell me about maybe your first job or your family?
My personal family?
Yes.
Okay. I'm presently married. I got married in 1950, so that's 44 years ago. I worked in a company in New York City called Endicott Johnson, which you may know as a shoe company. And you don't see Endicott Johnson stores in New York, but if you're up in the country, you'll see the Endicott Johnson shoe store, you know. And I was in finance there. My friend, and who ultimately became my best man when I got married, was a Greek fellow named Sam Protentis. He knew a girl from Bloomfield who came to work in with us in New York. And she'd take the ferry back to, and the Lackawanna Railroad back to Bloomfield. And then one day, Sam asked me if I wanted to come to a party in Bloomfield. And at that time, Sam had a car, a big Buick. And we drove to Bloomfield, and we came to this house. It was at, the party was in his girlfriend Lois's house. So when I walked into the house, I saw people dancing in this big living room, and in another room, behind the living room, there was a big fireplace, and there was three women standing by the fireplace. And just from seeing one of them that struck me in a certain way that if you've ever heard of somebody being rendered speechless or the other kind of effects that you can have from falling in love with a vision. Anyhow, where it affected me was in my knees. I had the urge to sit down on the floor because my knees weren't working. So I had to struggle to get over to the couch and sit down real quick before I fell on the floor. And Sam happened to notice me. And he said, "What's the matter?" He says, "You're all white." And I told him, I said, "You see that gal over by the, yeah." I said, "Well, that's the effect she has on me." So he had a big kick out of that because I was brought out to meet her. And I didn't know it. And I married her in 1950, and we're still married. And I still have that feeling. We have three girls. The youngest one is Jacqueline, and she's a graduate of Montclair State College, and she's an editor for a medical company. And the oldest one lives in Nutley, New Jersey, with her two husband and two children. And
there's some grandchildren there.
Yeah. And he's an executive with Bell Telephone. And the middle girl, her name is Siobhan, S-I-O-B-H-A-N, which she spells S-C-H-E-V-O-N-E. Two N's. Because nobody can pronounce the Irish way of Siopan, you know. But she loves the name Siobhan because it's different and she is different. She married a hillbilly and she's down in West Virginia with two children. He was a tobacco farmer. Do you have a question? So my three girls, and I just retired. I retired 10 years ago from the corporate world. Mm-hmm. I was vice president of finance of the National Farmers Organization in Iowa. Then when I came back to the East Coast, back to Nutley, the old haunts of Nutley, where I had raised the three girls, all my friends were saying, "John, get into real estate." That was 10 years ago, because the market was zooming up. The very first house I listed sold 8 days later for $5,000 more than we rated it at.
Oh, so you went into real estate after retiring from your corporate career.
Yeah. So real estate, you became your own entrepreneurial, you become your own company, you set your own limits to what you can do or not do, or how much you want to make or not make, and you're not in a corporate structure where you have to be the right age and all of this kind of thing. But the market, the real estate market, got so slow that last year I just got out of it, last summer.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us on this
table? I've been back to Scotland, and during the Second World War, um, my brother Pat and I, and my sister Liz, or Elizabeth, who was 2 years older, and Rose, who was 2 years younger, the four of us got together, and we had our own apartment before the war. Mm-hmm. And that was, and while I was going to high school, and that was some years of real stability, because my parents had died when I was 9, and I was handed about from brothers and sisters. And I can imagine what kind of a burden I must have been. And I tended to be a little bit undisciplined. Imagine a guy like this going into a military thing like the United States Army. But I did okay. My brother and I got drafted on the same day, and the reason he got drafted is because I had come of age to be drafted, and he was the head of household, which is why they didn't draft him until I came of age. And then we went in together. And where did we go? We went into Fort Dix, New Jersey, and we both succeeded in becoming, you know, in testing you for aptitudes. We both became radio operators, you know, with code, Morse code. And we ended up in the same division in Camp Butner, North Carolina, the 78th Lightning Division. And we were there for a year doing maneuvers and training and blah, blah. And it got to be a kind of what is known as a hot outfit. We were rated highly in military circles because of maneuvers against other armies and what we did and blah, blah. Anyhow, then in my camp, I got a notice that I got to take a 7-day vacation, and after the vacation, report back because we were going to be shipped someplace. So I took the train up to New York and was off for a week. Then after the week was over, I went back to the camp. I got back to the camp, and the place had nothing but two military policemen. And that was all. Everybody else was gone. And I had to go and find out where the hell's all the guys. So they said, "Oh, well, where were you? They're all gone. They were shipped to Italy, and they all died on the Anzio beachhead."
So you were lucky that you weren't with them.
They all had received telegrams to come back.